Dear Grey Scott, we just worked out that the first time we met you were in Soldier Soldier, and now we're going to talk about Summer Water. Quite a few things in between have happened.
Quite a few things, yeah.
Just very interesting. Before we started recording, we started talking about AI. And you just said that you get sent questions when you're on doing on the PR trail, questions that have been
AI generated. Yeah, I mean, it's so impersonal because this is obviously one-on-one with two human beings talking in front of each other, and our conversation is based on our past meetings, on the world around us. The questions that are generated by AI are based on sort of a generic sort of search of Google about me and my career, and it's really quite impersonal. It seems like there's a barrier there. And like we were talking about how there was a film that came out with an AI-generated actor,
a female.
And you can just tell immediately. It's like watching films that have been, you know, generated by AI, which I've seen a few in the past, and they're just so different. You just don't feel a connection.
Yes, loses its heart.
It does. And then music, there was some band that sort of managed to pull the wool over someone's eyes about there was sort of this sort of 70s band, sort of sounding band. And I listened to it and I thought, that sounds so kind of just middle of the road. And there's no sort of distinction there. There's no identity there. And then there was some lost music that I stumbled across on, I think it was Spotify. I don't know. It might have been YouTube. I can't remember. Anyway, and I listened to it and I thought, that doesn't sound real. And of course, it turns out that it's AI. And they're saying, oh, these lost tapes from the 70s or the 60s. And I just thought, I don't think it is. And so I think we're living in an age where it's a little bit scary. And I was just saying to you before that if you were born in the 1900s and you were grown up with the technology during the Industrial Revolution in the UK or anywhere in the world, and you lived until, let's just say you lived until you were 75, you were born in 1900, technology sort of didn't really change a massive amount. But if you were born in the 1960s, like I was, and you have lived through into 2025, where you are now, the changes have been extraordinarily massive.
Mm.
If you think about the technology, we're talking about AI, we're talking about the computers. And computers originally, of course, were invented by, let's just say the first computer was Alan Turing. Because we're talking about Enigma. And
Enigma,
that character was kind of based on him. And it was all very sort of extraordinary what he did. And, of course, it was all about breaking the codes of the Enigma machine that the Germans were using in the Second World War. So it was a sort of good thing that he was doing. And now it's been used for nefarious means, I think, because our lives have been taken away from us by technology. And I don't know whether I'm really old-fashioned or whether I'm just a stick in the mud or whether I'm just terrified of technology, but I'm just not very good at it.
But it's not about not being very good at it. I think in many ways that we have to embrace it. And personally, I think I have. My husband is the opposite. He's wary of it. I have embraced it. But what I do see is that it's taking away... I'm going to use the word again, heart. I think a lot of young people who are, and we're very aware of the rise in anxiety, of the whole maniverse, all the
social media,
the everything.
Yeah.
And it's becoming, and the loneliness is increasing. So all these young people are just sitting there with their phones in front of their faces and thinking that our like means that they've got a friend and they're not communicating with people. And that worries me.
Yeah.
And actually, that's where... what you do, film and television and all, and theatre as well, but film and television, so important because you give us an insight and you're real and I don't want it to be AI. You give us an insight into the world.
Well, I don't want to be AI either, and I'm happy to be involved in an industry that is really about storytelling, about you sort of reflecting other people's lives through the course of, or through the lens of a writer. And they tell a story and I read it and I respond to it because I feel connected to it. Mm. if it's something that I'm, you know, that, that I respond to. And if I then that manifests itself into a play, a television show or a movie, then you make it and you hope that other people can see in your story their own lives
yes,
as well.
Absolutely.
And that's what the whole point of literature, about storytelling, about that aspect of life, the arts industry is all about, whether it's painting as well. You know, you look at an Edvard Munch painting and you go, you look at the screen and you go, that's how I felt when I was 21. I didn't know what I was doing with my life or where I was going to go or what was happening or my darkest periods of my life. You know, I recognize that. Or whether you're talking about an Egon Schiele or any great painter, you recognize your own life in that painting. And of course, it could be impressionistic or it could be, you know, any kind of form of painting, and you want to connect to that
painting. But that's how I think that AI story is going to, that is, we're going to lose that connection. And that's what, it really does worry me.
Well, one of my biggest fears, I think, for my children is that they don't recognise or they fail to reach a point where they feel comfortable in the world because they understand who they are and they understand their purpose in life and they understand that the purpose in life is not to be famous or to be someone else's idea of success. It's actually about discovering, you know, walking down the street and looking at the landscape and just taking joy out of, you know, out of that, or reading a book and reading someone else's words and going, that's so familiar to me because that happened to me. And we go through our lives, I think, with social media, and it's there is a sort of there's a danger, I think, that people measure their own lives by what they see in social media.
Absolutely.
And you walk along the street and you'll see someone taking a selfie of themselves and it's fake because they're projecting this image of extreme happiness and it's like, this is my life, it's amazing. And it's like, mate, you just walked along the street there and I saw you and you were miserable as sin and suddenly you put on a smile and you're pretending to everyone else that your life is magnificent. And I hope that it is magnificent, but there's a fakeness, there's a sort of...
Well, it's the filters and the this and the that and everything. And I think, again, I'm going to go back to why I think what you guys all do with TV and film is important.
Yeah.
Because you are giving us an insight into all sorts. I mean, I love books as well. Absolutely love books as well because you can paint those pictures in your mind. But but you just used a word and I'm now dying to know. You're talking about success and for your kids to think of success. And I agree. I don't think success is fame. That what you know, when young people say, I just want to be famous, that's not success if you become fame, but it's the journey or whatever you do. But to you, what is success then?
And it's really simple. My father said to me when I was very young, he said, son, he says, the definition of success is how happy you are.
Yeah.
And he was really happy guy.
A wise man.
I mean, I'm miserable as sin, but he was so happy. He was like, I mean, he had an interest in life, my dad, because he was born in 1918. So he was old when I was born. Mm. And the first thing he did was, he left school at 14. He was born in Barrhead in Glasgow. Rough background. Worked in a blacksmith's. And then he was a footballer. He played for Queen's Park and Pollock Juniors. He did that. And then the Second World War came along and he went and joined and he fought with the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders in France. And then he got injured, sort of got invalided out. He came back and he ended up being a copy boy for the Daily Express. And then and then it doesn't stop there. And then him and his brother, my uncle Tom, got into theatre and they sort of joined this theatre company called the Glasgow Unity Theatre, which was this kind of left-wing socialist theatre company in Glasgow that became very quite well known. And they did these productions like Men Should Weep by Ina Lammers-Stewart. They did The Gorbals Story. They did some Sean O'Casey plays, which they took down to London. My dad only stayed at it for 6 years. His brother did better than him. But that got me into loving theatre because he used to take me to the sets in Glasgow. So I would watch all these theatre productions in Glasgow and I fell in love with theatre. That's when I was like 14. And so I did a play at school and that's how I got into theatre. And by reading as well, because I read. We didn't have many books at home, so I would go to the local library and I would just read and read and read.
How wonderful.
And I got into literature and literature, you know, D.H. Lawrence, later on, you know, John Irving was a bit later than that, and then George Orwell, and even, you know, Scottish writers as well. Robin Jenkins, I remember reading.
But they feel, the Corngatherers. Books wonderful because you can paint those pictures for yourself. Have you ever been in any books that you'd read when you were younger that have then been made into films and you thought, wow, I'm in my book? I'm in my head, as it were.
Well, I just did this thing recently that we're reading for my son. I've got a 10-year-old son, and we're reading these Crookhaven books, and suddenly they offer me the series of it. So I just finished the first season of Crookhaven, which is about this school for crooks, and I play this, the best way to describe him is a posh Fagin. He sort of gathers all these young kids into this...
Your son's going to love this.
He loves it. He absolutely loves it. And he's reading it now. They're on the second book, I think.
No, but he's going to love that you're actually
I hope so. I hope it's good. But it's really about this guy who runs a school called Crookhaven, and he brings in all these kids from very dysfunctional, sort of broken families. And he trains them to be spies. And so they go out into the world, MI5, MI6, CIA, whatever. And it's really quite a brilliant story.
I love that.
J.J. Okonjo, who's written them, he's written 5 or 6 novels. And it's really quite fun.
Is it a TV show?
It's a TV show, yeah, BBC. Hasn't come out yet. It comes out in, I think, February.
Okay, I'm sorry to do the obvious thing, but you are very busy. Which is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you're here to talk about Summer Water as well, which I've watched the first 2 episodes of.
Sarah Moss novel, Again, novel started off as a novel, and I read the novel, and the novel is like a stream of consciousness, and it's brilliantly written.
But that's how it's been made. It is. It's sort of, I'm watching somebody, it's extraordinary.
Yeah,
you don't want to stop. It. And I know people say that about box sets and things. And I used to love, and you and I are old enough to remember the weekly drop of things. I kept wanting to know, I was in instantly.
Yeah, I mean, it's set in a summer water sort of holiday camp with log cabins in Scotland somewhere, which is kind of familiar to me from, you know, growing up in Scotland and going to the Trossachs as a kid. And we kind of went all over, and we stayed in a lot of caravan sites as well on the west coast of Scotland. But there was one place we went to when I was a boy. Anyway, so this story is set there. And my character, David, and his wife, Annie, they've been coming to this holiday camp for years, since they were kids, you know, very, very young. And of course, there's all these new people come in again and again and again. So it sort of follows the story of all these different families. And my story is that I'm a doctor and married to this woman. I'm not quite sure.
No spoilers.
Okay, this is what happens. I'm not going to tell you what happened. Anyway, but my relationship is with Annie, my wife, and it goes back and forward in time.
I love a time jump.
It goes back into my childhood, or not childhood, but when he was in his early 20s and he became a doctor in Glasgow. And my son plays him, Gabriel, plays me as a young man, and he's so good. And it goes back into Annie's life as well, and her sort of past, you know, life when she was younger as well. And Shirley Henderson plays Annie.
She's brilliant, Shirley Henderson.
She's amazing. I've always wanted to work with her, and I've known about Shirley Henderson since I was, I think, 19. I knew about her, and I've watched her career over the years, and always loved her. I thought she was a magnificent actress. And then I went to see the girl from the North Country, in the West End.
I was going to say that. I loved
that. And my God, when she started singing, I was like, fell off my chair. I was like, my God, not only is she an extraordinary actress, but she's got the voice of an angel. So we ended up doing this together, and it was a joy from start to finish.
But it's one of those ones that you do, which I love to do, that you find yourself sort of not pausing it, because I don't like pausing something, but thinking, okay, but that's why he's like that. Oh, I see, that's why she's... Who's that, though? But how did that happen?
He carries a lot of guilt and shame, my character, from things that happened in the past. But his person... I mean, I think it's safe to say he's a bit of a narcissist. And of course, narcissists, you know, find it very...
There are a lot of them around at the moment.
Yes, I know. There's a lot of narcissists around. But it was interesting playing that character, because he's you know, I hope he's nothing like me, but it was the voice. And my mother came from Kelvin Dale in Glasgow, and that was a kind of lower middle class sort of background, although she didn't have a wealthy upbringing at all, but her voice was very, very middle class. And I wasn't brought up in that. I was brought up in a council estate in Fife on the East Coast, and her voice was just so... Loved my mother. My mother was a magnificent woman in many, Aww. Many respects, but she... I was so embarrassed when she came into my
really?
School. Oh, my God, because she talked like that. You know, like my character, David, and somewhat, I talked like that, you know, and I was brought up in freaking council estate in Fife, and so, you know, I used to hide because she'd come in and...
And she sounded too posh, did she?
She not only did she sound posh, but she wore this sort of hat and sort of gloves that came up to her
Your
elbow.
Your mum picked you up from school with hat and gloves
she
on?
She would come to parents' day, and then she would have these, you know, this four sort of leopard skin jacket and real, actually.
I love the sound of your mum.
She was something else. She was a force of nature, my mother. But she was also, what she did, and what I'm forever grateful for, will always be grateful to my mother for, was she instilled in me a sense of purpose and a sense of bloody-mindedness. And also, because it's safe to say that I got into a lot of trouble at school, I nearly got expelled 5 or 6 times. And
can I ask why, or is it...
Well, I set fire to the toilets once. I got into fights with a lot of rival schools. I had a combative relationship with my headmaster who despised me.
Oh, no.
Massively, yeah. He sent letters to my mum saying that I was the worst pupil he'd ever taught in his entire life, and I would amount to nothing in my life, and that she should be ashamed.
Sorry, that's horrific. That's actually horrific. Yeah. The headmaster.
But it's interesting because when I read the letter, because my mother read it out to me, I kind of went, well, that didn't faze me. I just thought, well, he's a narcissist, and he's also a sadist. And
what a horrible man!
He was a horrible man. He was.
And now
horrible.
Look, sorry, if he, I don't know if he is still around, but
no, I think he's gone. But he was.
But he'd be the sort of person.
Steal. He wore a cloak. He wore this long black cloak, and we used to call him the Batman. And I stole his cloak once as well. And he would sort of try and pull me out of classes. This went on for a long time. Pull me out of class, and sort of one time they came to get me to go to the headmaster wants to see, and I went, you know what? I don't think that I should. And the teacher was like, I remember, I think it was Mrs. Cunningham. She was my English teacher, and she was great. She taught us, and she had a love of literature as well, and so I sort of tied in with what I was reading as well. But she said, she looked at me, she goes, I think you should go and see him. And I went, I'm not going to see him. And then he dragged me, got me.
Oh, this is horrible.
But this is the time we used to get belted. And I used to get belted most days.
You know,
they have this thick leather belt with 3 prongs in it.
Dude, this is horrible.
This is Scotland. This is what it was like. And I remember we had this maths teacher as well. And he was pretty sadistic as well. And he loved belting me. And so one day I just grabbed him and I just said, you belt me again and I will end you.
Oh, anyway, my.
So that was the kind of environment.
But actually, you know, all of that you've been through, I think that is horrific. I really have to
Well, it's what everyone else went through. It wasn't particular to me. There was other kids who had problems as well. But I think my headmaster particularly...
That's not what school should be.
No, it shouldn't be. But he really didn't like me. He really didn't like me at all. And so he really had it out for me. And so my mother instilled in me was a sense of self... It wasn't self-love so much. It wasn't that. What it was a sense of having a right to occupy the space that you were standing in, regardless of what you felt about yourself. Because, you know, I'm a very flawed human being. I'll be the first one to admit that. But I have a sense of determination within me. That really helped me through to get out of the background that I was brought up in and into that world of acting, because, you know, everyone at my school said you can't be an actor, because when I was 14, I was like, I'm going to be an actor. And they were like, no, you can't do that. But I had some sort of sense, and my mother said to me, you know, if that's what you want to do, then that is what you will do.
And I mean, it is incredible, though. You're saying that at 14, and that was a few years ago. And now looking at you, you know, you have the most extensive... CV, biography, whatever you want to call
well,
it.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, you it is extraordinary the amount of things that you've done and the amount of things that you've still got coming to do and that you will do. That is there a part of you that sits there at home on a Sunday afternoon with your shoes off and just like, hey, look what I've managed to do?
I think sometimes you sort of, listen, the older I've got, the more I've been able to be appreciative of what I do have. And I have a lot of gratefulness in my personality. You know, when I was younger, I had quite a few demons, you know, in this industry, which is a hard industry because if you get successful as well, if you're thrust into the limelight in Hollywood, and it's sort of, I didn't particularly deal with that in the best way, you know.
Did you like the fame and the...
I really like the fame. No. I liked working and I still love acting. I love creating characters. And for me, it's always been about being able to jump into someone else's world. Some characters I play have been similar to me, but some have been completely different. You know, recently I played Gordon Brown. I played, you know, sort of an Exetonian in my Oxford year. I was in, you know, I played Moriarty and Sherlock and Daughter. I did a movie in German on Netflix, and because I spoke German at school, that was another thing I did that was sort of that I loved and used, you know, recently. But it's always been about being able to. You know, to me, the parameters have always, I wanted them to be wide in the acting world because I wanted to be able to do this and I wanted to be able to do that.
And you've done that.
And I didn't want to do the same thing
again
and
again.
The closest I think I've got to myself was when I did Crime, the Irvine Welsh thing.
Yes.
That was my world.
Yes.
That was where I was kind of brought up. And, you know, he's a really good friend of mine, Irvine Welsh, and probably one of my favourite writers of all time.
Oh, how wonderful to be able to work on something written by him.
That was pretty...
That was incredible. It's so, like I said, you know, when I'm going to be chatting to somebody, I deep dive and I go, I read everything and I look at old interviews and I find anything I possibly can, hopefully deeper than any blooming AI, but I'd go through all of that.
A lot deeper. Well,
and
you're
then,
magnificent. You're
and
magnificent.
Then, no, shush. Yeah. But then I just, there's never a moment that it ever seemed that you weren't making the right decision for the next thing you were doing. Was it all very carefully thought through? Because each step, it's like, oh, that makes sense after that.
Well,
I mean, Desperate Housewives to whatever,
yeah,
you know, each
that,
step.
That was the thing. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it was really planned meticulously at all. All I wanted to do was not repeat myself.
Well, that's what you did. You didn't. I mean, you said from this to that.
Yeah.
And it seems to be that you never did... Oh, well, he's done that again, or he's done another one like that. Or they're all the extraordinary breadth of things.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think I've been lucky that I've been afforded the opportunity to play, and in Crookhaven, I play. I've got lots of a very eclectic mix of friends, and so I sort of draw on all of them when I, you know, depend on what I'm doing. And so
do they spot themselves?
One of a friend of mine, David. I'll say his name, he might be embarrassed. David Naylor Leland, who's an Exetonian, he said he went to school, or if you don't know what that means, he went to Slough Grammar. And so he's been very useful to me in terms of
that's fantastic.
Voice and stuff like that. But anyway, so he's in the character playing Crookhaven is just a very posh sort of guy. But to me, it's fun as well. Acting should be fun also, because sometimes it's you delve into the world of Ray Lennox and crime, and it's intense and it's... You know, it's not, it's enjoyable from a point of view of the creative side of it, but also, you know, you're going into dark areas and so it has a lingering effect on you because what you're trying to do in acting is you're trying to authenticate the character that a writer has created. And so you bring your own experience of your own life to that character. And it's hard, I'm not being sort of pretentious here when I say that you have to really kind of give of yourself. You have to, you know, it doesn't cost you nothing, as it were. but sometimes you present it with a character that's just great fun to play, you know, and the character in Crookhaven is quite fruity. shall we say. And Summer Water, he's also, you know, you've seen it. And so he's kind of, you know, he's lively and he's sort of, he's got a certain amount of high regard for himself. And he has a lot of fears, and a lot of the fears are based on, you know, him being the most important person in the room. So I loved playing that character.
So, okay, you've mentioned the word joy. I mean, this is Reasons to be Joyful, and you've mentioned the word fun.
Yes.
And the other side of acting is, I mean, there's, you say you've had some very dark times personally for yourself.
Yeah.
But also to be able to escape into those characters and to be able to have that fun.
Yeah.
That must be very important to you as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that
because of the darkness.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I'm certainly a lot happier now than I have been, you know, in my past.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes. No,
but what a lovely thing to be able to say.
Yeah, I'm so much happier, you know, and I have a lot to be grateful for, and I am very grateful, and that's got a lot to do with many things in my life. But, I'm someone who doesn't, you know, I used to drink a lot when I was younger. And other things. And now I don't. Yeah. And that's great. And that's been a long time where I haven't done any of that.
How long have you?
23 years, something like that. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And you did, and has it, do you have those moments, as lots of my friends do, where they just say, wow, I've done that. Wow, life is better.
I don't miss it for a second. Let me tell you, my life is immeasurably better.
Oh, that's so lovely,
you know,
to hear.
I just love it.
But it's not easy for a lot of people. There are
lots of things, but, you know, there's many bodies that help, and you know, and that's great. But I just, you know, listen, I've got so many things in my life to occupy me now, and I'm incredibly busy.
That's fantastic.
And I'm just grateful for, you know, the opportunities that I get still to work and create, and you know, I produce as well, and I have a company, and that takes up a lot of time, and I'm so grateful to be in the world of storytelling and to be able to share stories with people, and hopefully they'll see it and they'll connect. And there's nothing better than someone. I remember doing this TV series quite a few years ago called Father and Son. It was set in Manchester, about a gangster who'd got out of the world of, you know, crime and gone to live in Ireland. And then his son, he was quite estranged from, got involved in a murder in Manchester. And so he was drawn back into it. And it was written by Frank Deasy, who sadly is no longer with us. But he was an extraordinary writer, Frank. And he lived in Glasgow. He was Irish. And I was quite close to Frank. And to this day, he's probably, you know, him and Irvin are probably my two favourite writers of all time. Anyway, but when we made that series, it was all about, you know, it was my kind of world, but in Manchester, and people running up to you in the street and grabbing you and saying that meant so much to
me. Oh,
because you're projecting, you're presenting a world which perhaps is not shown an awful lot, and so it means a lot to people when they can say, "That's my life."
That's exactly what I was saying. And I think with the news, and we don't need to underline what's going on around the world because it's all horrific and very frightening, and there's a lot of darkness. That's why we need the world that you all create. By the way, this is a really odd thing, but I'm just going to throw it in there.
Yeah,
you're going to just give me one of those looks. I think you should be the next Doctor Who.
The next Doctor Who? Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting. I did Doctor Who.
I did an episode.
I did one episode of Doctor Who with Matt Smith.
But I think you should be Doctor Who.
We laughed a lot.
I think you should be Doctor Who. I think we should call Russell T. Davis now and say, right, do Grey Scott.
Well, Doctor Who. Well, there you go. He's great, Russell T. Davis. I mean, It's a Sin was phenomenal.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
He's
very talented. He's very, very talented. A very nice man. And very, very tall as well.
He's a lovely man.
He's very nice.
He's a chum. Nice. I'm going to actually gonna leave him a voice note. Hello, Russell. I've just met the new Doctor Who. And it should be. Would you do it? Would you do one of those
Doctor
sort of characters?
Who?
No, but would you do a character? It's like, I mean, you did Moriarty, of course. But you know, would you
David
do...
Moriarty with David Thewlis playing Sherlock, who's brilliant. He's one of my favourite actors. I mean, Naked, I still think about Naked today as an actor because, you know, I love other actors and I love being around other actors and I love, you know, I'm very appreciative of other people's talents.
So, okay, you got, right, magic wand. Okay.
Yeah, Yeah.
You can be any character, say Doctor Who. You can be any character with any actors. You can, there, you've got two actors to choose. Anyone. Go. Right. Anything. Yeah. Come on. The part and the other actors.
The part I'm not so sure of because if it hasn't been written. But listen, I'm a huge fan of... my mates in the acting world are, I would say, David Threlfall, David Thewlis, Rufus, Sewell, Reese Evans.
Okay, so all
really
of you
cool, all of us
in a together, show together.
In a show together. Maybe David Morrissey as well.
David Morrissey, okay, that's it. Okay, I'm there, right.
I love all
so
of them.
So you're a merry band
actors.
Of...
And then maybe, shall we chuck in Dan Day-Lewis as well?
Okay.
Love Dan Day-Lewis.
Okay, Dan, I call him Daniel, but you can call him Dan.
I think a lot of people call Dan the man. But and then we've got... Let's say De Niro and Pacino.
I've
met quite a few times.
Oh, of course you have.
Well,
please.
Course, but
sorry.
I was
no.
terrified to meet De Niro because this guy wanted me to introduce
you've me met
to
them both.
I met them both, but I was so terrified of meeting De Niro because I was like, he was the guy for me, you know?
Yes.
I mean, Pacino as well, and Hoffman and Gene Hackman, and all these people were like. No, I don't know them. I know Pacino because he was friends with my wife. And so anyway, but...
Yes, and what was he like?
Oh, so nice.
And Robert De Niro, because you were scared of meeting
him? Well, he was quite shy and didn't really speak much to him, but it was, you know, it was De Niro, you know, and he's like, he's done some of the movies that are like Once Upon a Time in America, Raging Bull,
yes.
Mean Streets, Taxi Driver.
So is he going to be in the same thing now with David and David
He can come in and be part of
You've
it.
You've got three Davids
yeah,
and
okay.
a couple of Dans.
Yeah,
okay.
I've got three Davids.
Yeah. Anyone beginning with D, in fact, Do Great, Dan.
Do Great,
David,
Dan,
David and David. David
yeah.
Okay. And then De Niro.
I should be so lucky. I've worked with Rufus before and I've worked with David.
Oh, he's got he begins with R. You can't have
can't
Rufus,
have,
though.
I can't have that. Okay.
But in your... because you're making your own things as well
yeah.
with your production company.
Yeah.
You must... And I know you just keep saying about how you love books. If you see something that you love, a book, you read something that you absolutely
yeah.
It grabs you.
Yeah.
Do you start that then? Do you just go, that's...
Try, yeah. I mean, there's a couple that I've done, like Crime, for example, started many years before we actually made it because I was doing a series with a director and a producer and it had gone particularly well and they said, we want to do something else with you. So I said, let's go and meet Irvin because he's a mate of mine and we'll see. So we went to Ireland and he said, have you read Crime? And I said, I haven't read it because it had just come out. So we all read it and we all loved it and we couldn't get it made. We tried really, really hard and so, you know, not through any fault of them. And I just said, well, I'll take the book and I'll... And eventually I met the guy who became my partner in my production company, Tony. And... we developed it and eventually... It was funny because I always think about my mother because everyone said no to it. Everyone said, no, we can't, it's too dark. And I was like, with Tony, I was like, it's so good. It's so good. Mm. We're going to get this made. And we just kept on chipping away. And eventually ITV came and said, okay, we want to make it. And that's what happened with it. But you've got to be so strong. You've got to be bloody minded. I mean, people say no to you all the time. One of the first movies I did, the director said to me, not only did he say no, he went, not in a million years are you going to get this part. And I was like, okay. And eventually I got the part.
Oh, that's fantastic. Your first film?
No, not my first film, but it was one of the... It was Ever After. It was, you know, the movie I did with Drew Barrymore.
With Drew Barrymore.
Because all that I'd done a movie called Twin Town in which I played this quite rough
yes.
drug addicted...
Like, that's what copper. I said about they couldn't be
and
more
so,
different.
And he was like, no. No, I don't think so. No, 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 no. And I was like, okay. And then eventually, you know, anyway, so through various sort of means, I managed to get the part. But
I love
you've
that.
You've got to be Teflon.
So you've got to be tough.
Tough. Not only you've got to be tough, you've got to be just, you know, people will say terrible things about you all the time. It's like, that's why I don't read reviews, because even when someone says to me, you've got to read this review, it's so good, and you go like, nah. My instinct is like, I don't want to read it because...
I totally agree.
Because anyway, so because you make the mistake, one day you're sort of, your guard's down, you're feeling in a good mood, you wake up in the morning and you click on the email where they've sent you and you go, oh, I'll just give it a quick look, and you read it and you go, oh my God, that's amazing. Oh my God. And then they'll say, because I always hated him as an actor. He was always like this or that. So there's always a sort of a dig. And so people like to tear you apart.
I totally agree. Don't ever read a review.
But then not everyone's going to, that's the one thing you've got to learn early on. Not everyone is going to love you. There's going to be people who just don't like you for whatever reason. Don't take it personally. It's just the way of the world.
But that only comes with age. That really does. Yeah. I mean, you know.
You don't feel like that when you're
the crazy
21 and you're
industry.
Bad reviews.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. But if you read a good review, then you believe that, then that means you believe the bad. So don't believe the good and don't believe the bad.
Exactly.
Just don't read them.
I love doing what I do. And so I'm happy. Do I have frustrations? Of course I do. Everybody does. I'm a human being. But I think it's important to see the good rather than, you know, I used to be a glass half empty when I was very, very young. But something pulled me out of that and kept me going. And now I sort of, you know, I'm like, I've got so much to be grateful for. So
Grey Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.